Peter B. Collins, News and Comments. It's Friday, December 20th, 2013. A couple of landmarks for us here today. This is my 1,000th podcast since we started doing this in June of 2009. And it is my last podcast for 2013, unless, of course, news breaks over the holidays. He's gone. Chrissy Hynde, The Pretenders. It's one of my favorite pop holiday tunes. Not explicitly a Christmas song. Or at least not a carol. And I hope that you find yourself over the holidays, whether you honor Christmas or Kwanzaa or nothing whatsoever. Maybe it's just the winter solstice that is on your calendar. I hope you have time to pause, to reflect, to meditate, back away from commerce and the work life. Spend some time with friends and family. Maybe read a book, you know, put down the screen, put down the gizmo that you're using right now. I won't tell you what to do, but maybe I can inspire you just a bit. Well, before taking off for what I think is honestly a pretty well-deserved vacation in Hawaii, President Obama held a end-of-the-year news conference today. By the way, I do approve of his choice of a vacation spot. I was on the beach at Lanikai on the Kailua coast of Oahu just a few months back, and it is a beautiful place and a wonderful place to hang out. My friends Bill and Rebecca got married on that beach, and so I really, while I'm a sharp critic of the president, as you're about to hear, I bear him no ill will, and I hope that he and his family do enjoy a well-deserved holiday break. If you recall, last year, he got a late start and had to come back early because of the phony crisis over the fiscal cliff. So at least this year, we can be grateful that we're not being dragged through that again. To the press conference, the president seemed quite at ease. The press corps showed a new sense of aggressiveness, particularly around the issues that I care so much about the NSA and our Fourth Amendment. And I want to single out Ed Henry. I believe he's at CNN still. But he pressed the question and the president very hard and then followed up with tough questions. And an AP reporter opened the issue of the NSA with the president, and he failed to answer her question. Because he was asked, have any plots been busted up because of the NSA's massive collection of telephone metadata? And boy, did he dance all around that question, but never answered that explicitly. Instead, he posed the question that he wanted to answer, and then he answered it, which is that there is no evidence that the NSA has abused the collection of metadata. And I find that, frankly, unconvincing, if not outright false. Because I consider it a massive abuse of the rights of Americans to collect all this information. While the president went to great lengths to say that he is very convinced that the NSA never abuses its abilities to collect all this information, only allows a small group of people to review these phone records, well, he didn't go into great detail about that. He just offered sweeping assurances, and it boils down to trust us. And, Mr. President, we don't, we can't, and we will not trust you. I don't trust the NSA. And I can't trust this president because he hasn't put the brakes on the rampage to bulldoze the constitutional rights that were mostly in effect before 9/11. He was asked point blank by Ed Henry why James Clapper still has his job. That's the question that I've made politicians uncomfortable with all year long. He didn't answer that question either. And he was pressed, should he pardon Ed Snowden or agree to a plea deal? And he dodged that question. Now, he actually has a rationale for that. Snowden is a suspect. He's been indicted. If he ever returns to U.S. soil, he will be tried. And it's fair enough that the president shouldn't weigh in on that process while it is still ongoing. Of course, he could have ended the whole process by saying, yeah, I think that's a good idea. I'll pardon Ed Snowden on my way to Hawaii. What do you say? Maybe I'll even drop in at Booz Allen Hamilton's office in Honolulu, where Ed Snowden used to work, and meet some of his former colleagues. I know I'm daydreaming here, but it is possible the president could have said that. He could have changed the whole tenor of what he calls a debate, a conversation that we really should have, he says. When it comes down to even the watered-down 46 recommendations of his hand-picked panel, including Cass Sunstein, say, well, he's going to think about it over the long break here, and he'll let us know in January. But he spun this up not as a problem of our trust in our government, but that the American people just need to have more confidence that the NSA isn't spying on Americans. And I find that disingenuous. A very clever political spin on the part of the president to turn this, you know, on its head. And Ed Henry was very clear when he talked about Ed Snowden and how Snowden really has done a great service to the American people. And Major Garrett picked up on that theme when he pressed the question a little later in the news conference to the president about a Snowden amnesty. He said, after reading Judge Richard Leon's court ruling, after seeing the summary of the 300-page report from the handpicked commission, Major Garrett, used to be a Fox News guy, said that many Americans think that what Ed Snowden did was proper and just. And that's where Obama said, well, I can't really talk about Snowden. There's a conversation we need to have. But that the manner in which Snowden provoked this conversation has been damaging. And that we could have had the conversation without the damage. But the truth is, the president hasn't engaged in this conversation much. And he was properly asked if the assurances he gave us 6 months ago about how we've struck the right balance between privacy and security still holds. And his spin on that was, well, that's a daily judgment call and it changes every day and we got people here trying to prevent the next attack and keep Americans safe. And then he says he'll leave it to the Justice Department and the courts. The Justice Department that he has ordered not to investigate the clear crimes that occurred in the previous administration. And the courts that have been so deferential to the executive branch, to the failed oversight of the Congress, the secret FISA court. Not a word was mentioned about the FISA court and efforts to reform it or disband it today. And so, ultimately, I give the president high marks for his ability, like presidents before him, to take a situation, approach it calmly and deliberately, distort the intent of questions that are put to him in order to spin out these talking points that were settled on before he even came to the James Brady press room at the White House. And one of the things the president said, cleverly parroting the words of one of the members of the commission that filed its report this week, I think it was Richard Clark who said this, that just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. Now, that is one of the classic Obamaisms. Because all kinds of different people will hear that and interpret it to mean what they want to hear. Oh, yeah, he's gonna restore our Fourth Amendment right. He's going to rein in that rogue agency, the NSA. He's going to tell them just because they can doesn't mean they should. That is Barack Obama. At his best and worst, all at the same time. The president also didn't address the latest disclosures attributed to Ed Snowden. Secret documents reveal that more than 1,000 targets of American and British surveillance in recent years included Israeli Prime Minister Olmert, heads of international aid organizations, foreign energy companies, and a European Union official involved in a legal skirmish with Google. So what we've learned, again, clearly affirming what Ed Snowden has told us, what he told the people of Brazil earlier this year when he offered a trade. I'll explain the NSA spying on Brazil if you'll give me long-term political asylum. What he said was that the U.S. pursues commercial interests, not just security-related matters and, you know, the stuff we're told about terrorists and Al-Qaeda. And this is further proof coming from today's revelations. Foreign leaders, African heads of state and their family members, directors of United Nations relief programs, officials overseeing oil and finance ministries. And also, corporate and other interests that compete with American corporations. One of the targeted individuals is Joaquin Almunia, the vice president of the European Commission, which has oversight of antitrust issues in Europe, and he has taken on Microsoft, Intel, and most recently a 3-year standoff with Google. The surveillance reports don't specify whether the intercepts of Mr. Almunia's communications were requested by the NSA or by British spies. Almunia says he's strongly upset about the spying. And here comes the NSA with their denial. It denied it had ever carried out espionage to benefit American businesses. That's just big bullshit. Quote, Vance Vines, an NSA spokeswoman. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not Vance, it's Vanee, V-A-N-E-E. We do not use our foreign intelligence capabilities to steal the trade secrets of foreign companies on behalf of or give intelligence we collect to U.S. companies to enhance their international competitiveness or increase their bottom line. That is frankly not believable. Because the targets included the French oil company Total and a company called Thales, an electronics, logistics, and transportation outfit, along with the French ambassador and the German embassy in Rwanda. I mean, we are sucking up communications from all over the world. And the report says that while few, if any, American citizens appear to be named in the documents, they make clear that some of the intercepted communications either began or ended in the United States, and that NSA facilities carried out intercepts around the world in collaboration with their British partners. And this is why I say, in simple terms, NSA has to return to its original mission, only operating outside the United States. Gotta fire the liars. Clapper's name came up and the president didn't defend him, but also didn't defend his failure to fire the liar. Number three, as you've heard me say repeatedly, the FISA court must go. No ifs, ands, or buts. Now, the press corps should have raised this issue today because I think it's a fair assignment for the intelligence community if they're going to operate in the United States to try to provide security assistance for corporations whose commerce sites are hacked. You've probably heard that the Target retail chain has disclosed that since just before Thanksgiving, up through the 15th of December, 45.7 million credit and debit card transactions were exposed to hackers. I don't shop at Target. I don't shop much, but I don't ever shop at Target, really. And so I am not one of those 45.7 million. But that's a legitimate use of our law enforcement apparatus. Instead of, as we'll get to in a moment here, building systems to spy on First Amendment activists, they should be looking at the commercial hackers who breached Target. Instead of collecting in Bluffdale, Utah, millions of phone intercepts and cell phone location records every day. I want to pause for a moment and thank the people who subscribe and support this program. Joe Carson just renewed for another year. And I really value Joe's support. He is one of the surviving whistleblowers who still has his job at the Department of Energy in Tennessee. And he works tirelessly to support whistleblowers in every kind of federal walk of life. And I have a high regard for Joe, and I'm grateful for his support. And Judy Holloway, still location unknown, just signed up for a monthly subscription earlier today. Thanks, Judy. I welcome you. And I have great news. If you take out a new annual subscription anytime soon, we are able to restore the Kick-Ass Kona Coffee offer. Because Russ Archibald emailed me yesterday and said he will ship a new batch of Kona coffee beans to me right after the holidays. So I can now upgrade the bonus book offer. We have Heidi Boghossian's Spying on Democracy, and we also have a limited number of copies of Max Blumenthal's Goliath. So those are the bonus books available if you sign up for a new annual subscription, and I hope you'll take this opportunity to do that during the holidays. The other way you can help me out is our deal with Audible.com that earns you a free audiobook download of your choice from their archives of 150,000 audiobooks. You can download them for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And if you sign up today for a free 30-day trial at Audible.com following the links from PeterBCollins.com, they're going to pay me $15 for just the fact that you signed up. Even if you cancel within 30 days and don't owe Audible a dime, they'll still pay me $15 for your trial of their service. It's a no-risk, no-cost, win-win-win situation. So follow those links and be sure to share them with friends and family. You can give somebody an Audible trial subscription as a holiday gift and reward me with $15. That's a win-win scenario. We've been telling you for months now about the $11 million surveillance control room that's being built in Oakland, California. This is using federal funds to create what's called the DAC, the Domain Awareness Center. And credit goes to Darwin Bond Graham and Allie Winston, reporters for the East Bay Express, published in Oakland, because they have done some great investigation of what's going on there. We are told that because of the rampant crime and the violence on a daily basis in Oakland, that this is the only solution to tie all the video cameras in public and private locations. This started with the Port of Oakland. Tie them together with gunshot alarms and other sensors that they have so that they can crack down on violent crime in the city of Oakland. Now, I need to remind you that Oakland has a rogue police department that has been under federal court control for 10 years now since the Riders scandal, and they continue to fail to address the requirements of the court to fix the defects and deficiencies in the way they operate. And it's that rogue police department that is in control of the construction of this center. And guess what? They're using a contractor named SAIC, one of the same groups that fleeced the NSA for $6 billion in the Trailblazer scam. We reported on that with Bill Binney earlier this year. You can find the podcast at PeterBCollins.com. But what is most alarming is that an activist coalition called the Oakland Privacy Working Group obtained thousands of pages of emails and other public records related to this project. And in all the email exchanges between city staffers, the contract team building this center, there is no mention of robberies, shootings, or the 138 homicides that took place during the period of time covered by these records. City staffers don't discuss any studies pertaining to the use of surveillance in combating crime. In 3,000 pages of emails, the terms murder, homicide, assault, robbery, and theft come up zero times. So what are they doing? They are targeting First Amendment activists. This is a preparation for the return of Occupy or something like it to the streets of Oakland. It's insidious. It's un-American. It doesn't address the crime problems that Oakland faces. It doesn't fix the out-of-control police department. And just to throw a little whipped cream and a cherry on the top, SAIC overbilled the city of Oakland by more than $160,000 by purchasing expensive software and gadgets that staff kept for themselves. So there's profiteering that we can add to the painful loss of our constitutional rights. Over the holidays, I want to encourage you to catch up with our important interview with Max Blumenthal. And in the same package, David Lloyd, who is a professor of English at the University of California, Riverside, weighs in because he helped lead the boycott by the American Studies Association, which has 5,000 academics in its membership. They passed a boycott resolution against Israel. And so today, a full-page ad in the New York Times responds with lies and distortion. The headline reads, "Boycott a cure for cancer? Stop drip irrigation in Africa?" And this ad, which does not include any mention of who actually paid for it, there's a list of Israeli-related groups at the bottom, but it doesn't say who paid for the ad. But they attack the ASA. And let me just read this. The American Studies Association has voted to boycott Israel's academic and research institutions. That part is true. But then it says, and this is false, preventing scholars who live in a pluralistic democracy from participating in the global academic community is reprehensible. The boycott explicitly does not prevent scholars from participating in the global academic community. It targets the institutions. We very carefully clarified that with Professor Lloyd. And for them to call Israel a pluralistic democracy is a flat-out lie. And Max Blumenthal's book contains hundreds, if not thousands, of pieces of evidence to prove that. And then it says the ASA boycott follows a dangerous precedent set in the darkest times of the 20th century. Well, I would respond by saying Israeli policy follows dangerous precedents that were set in the absolute darkest times of the 20th century. And this is the kind of propaganda that Israel is so good at. And they're basically saying that the American scholars who are using the boycott to try to change the policies of Israel that are racist and discriminatory against Palestinians and other non-Jews, that this is reprehensible. Max Blumenthal's book really depicts the kinds of distortions, the mob mentality, the irrational that passes for legitimate commentary in the state of Israel today. And as when you hear the interview, I specifically talked to David Lloyd to expect this kind of virulent attack. This is a very interesting little discovery. We now know, because of the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, that Nelson Mandela underwent weapons training by Israeli secret agents of the Mossad in Ethiopia in 1962 before he was incarcerated, without the Israeli Secret Service knowing his true identity. He apparently went there and used a pseudonym, And he was known by the Israelis informally as the Black Pimpernel, which is a term used in the South African press to refer to Mandela. But he went to Ethiopia. He apparently took this training. And they said that he greeted our men with shalom, was familiar with the problems of Jewry and of Israel, gave the impression of being an intellectual. The staff tried to make him into a Zionist, but he expressed socialist worldviews and at times created the impression that he leaned toward communism. So it's fascinating. Something I did not know. On this podcast program, I rarely talk about MoveOn.org. In general, I think MoveOn is good for the people who are involved with it. But they shy away from the real issues that I care about. I'd like to see MoveOn challenging President Obama on the NSA. And so I've got my differences with MoveOn. But today I want to focus on something I commend them for. Their latest campaign is that they have identified hundreds of MoveOn members who are standing up to big oil and big gas by leading anti-fracking campaigns in their own communities. And in an email blast yesterday, they profiled 100 of them, and I just picked the first one here, Kay Kiker from Mentone, Alabama. Quote, "We live in northeast Alabama atop the Marcellus Shale Formation that is attracting fracking interests. We're deeply concerned about a public water well. The goal of my campaign is to educate the public about fracking and motivate citizens to get involved to protect homes and groundwater." I think that's excellent. And I'm glad to find something to praise MoveOn for. A few quickies here as we wind down here in our last podcast of the year. New Mexico has become the 17th state to allow same-sex marriage. And I'm glad to see marriage equality expanding in this country. Max Baucus has been named by the president to be the next ambassador to China. That gets him out of a Senate seat so that a guy in Montana can move up and run as the incumbent next fall. And I think it's a good move. I don't like Max Baucus. I think he was a big source of the problems with Obamacare and squeezing out even the public option, much less single payer. And Ron Wyden will become chair of the Finance Committee. He's a pretty good guy, particularly has shown good leadership on the NSA issues. Although, as I've said, sometimes he cares more about process and being included than challenging bad policies. He's certainly an upgrade from Max Baucus. Yesterday, I mispronounced the name of the billionaire from Russia who has received clemency from Vladimir Putin. His name is Khodorkovsky, and I called him Khodorovsky. Khodorkovsky, Mikhail Khodorkovsky. And they released him today. He's already in Germany. I think that's a nice step forward. You should know, though, that by giving him clemency, Putin just shortened his sentence by 4 to 6 months. The Pussy Riot girls, they were going to be out in March, and he let them out before Christmas. So he gets a PR boost from things that were going to happen anyway. Dennis Rodman has returned to Pyongyang on another diplomatic mission to North Korea. Enough said. And there's a breaking story today on the front page of the New York Times that deserves your attention. It's about a corruption scandal in Turkey that could bring down the government of Prime Minister Erdogan. And it says that it's because of a split with Fethullah Gulen. And it's my friend Sibel Edmonds who first tipped me off to Gulen. He is an Islamic imam from Turkey, individually very wealthy, not sure how he got his money. He owns newspapers and other media outlets there, but he's in self-imposed exile in Pennsylvania, where he controls a group of American charter schools that deserve a great deal of scrutiny and get absolutely none. And in our podcast, if you put Gulen, G-U-L-E-N, in the search window at peterbcollins.com, you will find some of the programs that we have put together about Gulen over the last couple of years. And the Times needs to do a full expose on Gulen. They have reported on him, but never in depth. And he's a murky figure who really is a foreign agent here in the United States, and operates with a great deal of impunity. Gives me pause, I'll tell you that. 70 American sailors are suing TEPCO, the Japanese utility company, claiming radiation sickness when they rode the USS Ronald Reagan to Fukushima to support the relief efforts after the earthquake and tsunami and the meltdown at the Fukushima complex. And finally today, I want to commend the county commission in the county where Las Vegas is situated, Clark County, Nevada. Because on Tuesday, they approved a resolution opposing the indefinite detention provisions of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012. Now, while this is mostly symbolic, it raises awareness about the serious problems with the law, and it is really an important accomplishment, achievement, by Dan Johnson and the folks at PANDA, People Against the NDAA. And it's this kind of citizen action in the face of the overwhelming cynicism about our dysfunctional government, about the incursions that our government officials take on our constitutional rights. When people fight back like this, I feel better. Today, I'm feeling a whole lot better. So I want to thank you for joining me today and as many days as you have in the past year for the Peter B. Collins podcast. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after January 1st, unless something big breaks in the meantime. And in that case, your RSS feed will alert you to a new Peter B. Collins Show podcast. And today, I want to leave you with my good friend, Dr. Elmo Shropshire, one of the best-selling Christmas songs in the last 30 years. And I love to support him because it's just a wee bit insidious. And I'm going to dedicate this one to Megyn Kelly, who thinks that it's very clear that Santa Claus was a white guy.
Here's the one that pays the rent. Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. She'd been drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go. But she forgot her medication, and she staggered out the door into the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack, she had hoof prints on her forehead and incriminating claws marks on her back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now we're all so proud of Grandpa, he's been taking this so well. See him in there watching football, drinking beer and playing cards with Cousin Mel. It's not Christmas without Grandma. All the family's dressed in black, and we just can't help but wonder, should we open up her gifts or send them back?
Send them back!
Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe. Now the goose is on the table, and the pudding made of fig. Ah! And the blue and silver candles that would just have matched the hair in Grandma's wig. I've warned all my friends and neighbors, better watch out for yourselves. They should never give a license to a man who drives a sleigh and plays with elves. Grandma got run over by a reindeer, walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, But as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
Dang it, Grandpa!
Grandma got run over by a reindeer walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, my goodness. And to all a good night.